This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. Now, eating out has gotten more expensive over the years, and yet, with longer working hours and more involvement of women in the workforce, it has also become more important. And according to a recent paper by the Khazanah Research Institute, this trend has particular implications for low-income households.
This is because the poverty line income, which has recently been revised up, does not actually capture this trend of eating out, considering that eating out now has become more and more of a necessity. So essentially, could we be underestimating how poverty is actually being calculated?
So for more insight into this, we're speaking this morning with Christopher Chung, Deputy Director of Research at the Khazanah Research Institute. Chris, perhaps start us out by explaining why exactly eating out is not taken into consideration for the poverty line income.
I think there is a practical reason in the sense that the poverty line income consists of the food and the non-food basket. And the food basket itself consists of a methodology to cost the calories that are required to deliver a household's basic food requirements. And this in turn is based on the kind of diet or nutrients that are required to obtain these calories. However, when you eat out, it gets a bit complicated in terms of data collection, like, you know, to be able to break down that plate of nasi lemak or laksa into its various components of nutrients and so on. So I think because of some of this data limitation and because the food basket is calculated based on calorie, so it gets a bit hard in corporate eating out. I mean, having said this, we feel that it is still important to draw attention to this issue because the exclusion of eating out in the poverty line income is not insignificant because of the increasing trend of eating out, especially amongst lower income groups. And we think that there are actually other ways where we can account for eating out in the PLI, even if we use the current methodology.
Chris, the report also notes that long working hours and increasing women's participation in the workforce has led to lead to poor households to source more of their food needs from eating out. But wouldn't this trend be seen across income groups? And how does it affect lower income groups in particular?
Well, the increase in expenditure for eating out is definitely seen across income groups. But I think we wanted to challenge this notion that eating out is a lifestyle choice compared to, say, eating at home. And it's only confined to those who are more affluent. But if we look at the data, and this is from the household expenditure survey, we can see actually that eating out has actually become equally as prominent for lower income groups as well. In fact, if you look at the price of eating out, and this is from the CPI or the Consumer Price Index, the price of eating out for low income groups has actually increased faster than the national average, suggesting that perhaps the increase in expenditure for eating out may not translate into more consumption of food items for low-income groups. Of course, people now tend to think that because of the pandemic, people tend to eat home more. But I think this is true for the national average. But for the lower-income groups who may not actually have the luxury to work from home, given the more labor-intensive nature of their work, you know, manual workers or cleaners or barbers and so on, eating out for them is not just a lifestyle choice, but actually has increasingly become a basic necessity.
What I understand is that urban younger households spend a larger proportion of their income on eating out compared to rural older groups. What does this tell us?
It is actually quite intuitive where you would expect food prices of eating out to be higher in urban compared to rural areas. You would expect, say, younger households to have smaller household size and therefore may not enjoy the kind of economies of scale to cook at home compared to larger households where you can, you know, stock up food and you cook for a larger family and so on. And I think in bigger cities like Kuala Lumpur, there is also the whole factor of longer commute time, which may actually make it more convenient for households to eat out compared to, say, you know, working late and then going back and still have to cook and so on. But I guess what we wanted to really do is to get a sense of the kind of households, or what we would say the profile of households, that actually has a higher probability of being counted as non-poor when they should be counted as poor, or what we will call an exclusion error in poverty measurements, if we do not price in the cost of eating out. And so we have arrived at this insight where households that tend to be excluded from poverty measurements, and this has implications for welfare assistance as well, tends to be households that are more urban and younger generally. Of course, I think we still need more granular analysis to understand some of these things in depth.
Now, Chris, you also suggest that not including eating out in the PLI leads to an underestimation of absolute poverty levels here in Malaysia. Are there any other factors we're not taking into account that might lead us to underestimate how dire things actually are?
Yeah, I think the crux of the problem lies with the fact that we have not fully accounted for the role of household production in how we think about socioeconomic life, and that we do not fully appreciate the kind of trade-offs that households face in terms of, you know, the market versus household production and how this structures some of the behaviors of households. And when I talk about household production here, I refer to the whole range of unpaid care work and domestic work, such as cooking, cleaning the house, doing your laundry, childcare, taking care of the sick people. All these things which I think are very valuable to households and to society, but they do not have a price. However, when households do not have the time to do some of these things at home and have to procure these services from the market, then we see the overall cost of living for households increase. So I think thinking more systematically about unpaid care work and time deficits will actually give us a more holistic picture of poverty measurement and how we can understand some of these things better. It's a long-winded answer of saying that the moment we think about household production, unpaid care work, time scarcity, and so on, that will actually help to enrich the way we also think about poverty and how to measure poverty.
Chris, as you suggest, an increasing scarcity of time is driving people to eat out more, and that doesn't seem to be a trend that's likely to reverse itself. What are the policy implications of this? Is it a matter of further revision of the PLI, or is it about addressing cost of living and wage issues, or is it a mix of both?
In terms of poverty measurement itself, I would say that it is about finding a way to incorporate eating out in the PLI, whether in terms of increasing the poverty line by a certain percentage by referencing, say, the price difference between eating out and eating at home, or valuing time scarcity and using this value as a basis to adjust the poverty line. My co-author, Ming Jun, he actually suggested to construct a youth poverty line that is basically based on using the items that are more frequently consumed by young people, including eating out. And these are sort of different ways we can sort of improve on the poverty line by incorporating eating out. But I think in terms of the broader policy implication, I would say that it is about factoring in household production in how we design our policies. So, for example, if you think about the policy on increasing women's participation in the workforce, and we know that this is an official policy and we have set target for this, the question is, have you also considered the kind of value that is lost from household production when women actually do not have the time to undertake some of these household production activities because they have to work in the market? And one example I can give is the example of childcare, where if, let's say, women were to enter the workforce, they get a low income, but they have to work long hours. And as a result of the long hours, they are unable to take care of the child and has to send the child to a childcare center, which incur costs, you know, and drive up cost of living for that particular household. So the question is whether this additional low income that you get from your work with the long hours will be able to compensate for the value that you lost from taking care of the child at home, which actually has direct implications on your cost of living. So I think understanding the dynamics of some of these things and how it interacts with work, unpaid care work, and so on, will help us actually to produce policies that are more comprehensive, not just in terms, you know, of how we measure poverty, but really to begin this whole conversation about how we think about these things more holistically.
Thank you for joining us, Chris. That was Christopher Chung at the Khazanah Research Institute, giving us a bit of insight into how we measure poverty. But right now we have the 8 o'clock news bulletin coming up for you, and then the Breakfast Grill with Sadly Sarkum of Honda Malaysia. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.